Today's show is brought to you by Ebby, a seamless underwear membership co-founded by actress and entrepreneur Sofia Vergara. Get 20% off your first order at shop.join-ebby.com with the code WORTHY20. Again, that's shop.join-ebby.com. You guys, these underwear are fantastic, and the bras are fabulous as well. I've been wearing this one bra day in and day out. I love it so much. Welcome to a universe with no panty lines in sight. Ebby sees undies as a major source of power. When you choose Ebby's, you choose to wear the absolute best and to empower women out of poverty and into business. How badass is that? With a loan as small as $90, a woman can transform her life, lift her family out of poverty, and build a stronger community. When she pays her loan back, the loan becomes available for another woman. You guys, Ebby underwear are fantastic and their bras are awesome as well, and they are fiercely committed to a positive impact on repeat. So get your butt over to Ebby, join the membership, or shop seamless panties now. Again, with your first order, you'll get 20% off. Just go to shop.join-ebby.com. You're going to love these underwear. Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian and author Debbie Casper talks about her meeting with Billy Joel. Or was it?
And I see this huge limo pull up, this big black limo. And I see two guys stumble out of it. And they look like a lot of trouble. The hostess starts walking them up the steps. She's bringing them up to my station. And as she's bringing them up, the shorter one starts waving to people on the steps like he's an emperor, saying, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Billy Joel. And that's my song. Hey, how you doing? I'm Billy Joel. I'm Billy Joel." And I'm looking at him thinking, well, now, if you were Billy Joel, why do you feel the need to say that you're Billy Joel?
Today on the show, comedian and author Debbie Casper talks about her evening with Billy Joel. But was it Billy Joel? Stay close.
Hi, guys. My name is Debbie Casper, and you're listening to Story Worthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener of over 10 years now, welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys had an opportunity to listen to the episode last week by comedian Bobby Oliver. Debbie, do you know Bobby Oliver?
You know, I do not.
Yeah, you know, the community of comedy is actually pretty small. But yet, that being said, I've been here for 23 years and I don't know you, you know? So, you know, there definitely are people that you discover, even if you've been here for decades.
Yeah, it's true.
Bobby Oliver is a wonderful girl and totally a player in the city here because she owns Dow Comedy Studio, which is a stage right there on Western. And she rents the stage out and she does a lot of open mics and she does shows. And I mean, it's so she's been in the game for a while. She also wrote a book called The Dow of Comedy. So she's just super talented. Anyway, the point is last week on the show, she told a story about being cyber stalked and it was really intense. Like it got super scary. She had this guy stalking her or cyber stalking her on Twitter. And of course she would block him. But he made over 40 accounts. And she was threatening her and it was all really scary. So anyway, go back, you guys, listen to Bobby Oliver talk about her cyber stalking story. It's kind of shocking. She's the one that says trigger warning. I think you can handle it. But anyway, the point is not today, you guys. Today, stick around because I'm here with another fabulous comedian. Her name is Debbie Casper, and she's just done so much in her life from writing books. So she's an author, and she also has been on stage, and she's also developed shows. She's like a master of the solo show, and I've had one solo show, so I know when you're talking about multiple solo shows, man, you're a hard worker.
No, I'm a masochist. Every time I do one, I tell my friends, please don't let me do this again. And they never do.
Because you're an artist, right? And so nothing's ever going to be done. Sorry to tell you, right?
Right.
But right now, Debbie, your new book is just killing me. It's so funny. You sent it to me and I've already read 200 pages. There's only about 70 pages left, I believe, but I'm having so much fun reading it. It's called You're Not That Pretty and Other Things My Parents Told Me. And then it says Stories from the Chaos. And Debbie, it is so funny and so spot on from so much of my own childhood.
Oh, thanks.
I just can't tell you how much I love this book. How long did it take you to write it?
60 years.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because
No. I mean that's the short answer. The long answer is I started writing essays about, these are called personal essays, although they're really just personal stories.
Yeah.
I don't know why they call them essays. I hate that. It sounds so terrible. Yeah, it sounds like we're in school.
Yeah.
But, I started writing them about 10 years ago, and then I put it away. And then I weave back in. And about 3 years ago, you know, my partner in life died, and I took a year off of everything, and I sat in my apartment. And I finished this book. I got it all in shape and I just felt like I was ready. I was channeling. I'm back. And that's what I did. So it's taken me a couple years to really whip it in shape.
But you know what? That's such a great answer because it does take, you know, writing a book, it's such an intense project to be able to take that time and to really sink in like that. And obviously you were ready. So it comes off so fluid and it comes off so like off the cuff. It really sounds like you're talking.
It's
just so funny. And growing up in the 70s, you know, I have four older sisters and an older brother, and you remind me of my sister so much, you know, and what you talk about in the book, you know, your parents and your father would say, and your mother would say, well, it's either that or a sharp stick in the eye. What do you want? And my father and my mother said so many of those euphemisms, especially my father, he would say, you're skating on thin ice.
Yeah. My dad had all these vaudevillian things he would say. We'd say, where's mom? And he would say, she went out to feed the dogs and the pigs ate her. I mean, who talks like that?
What does that mean?
I think it was from some vaudeville skit. It was so insane. And we'd say, Dad, what time is it? And he'd say, time all dogs were dead. Don't you feel sick? I mean, come on.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Wait, it's time all dogs are dead.
All dogs were dead. Don't you feel sick?
That is so... Okay, my dad used to call us a horse's ass, a moron, and a shit for brains.
Yeah, yep.
And sometimes he would say them all in one sentence, like, don't be a moron, you shit for brains, horse's ass.
My family was always, you're really not that bright, are you?
They would say that.
Yeah. You're really just not that bright, are you, Debbie?
Now, you have three brothers. Are they all older?
One is older, two younger. So I was the second oldest, yeah.
But they didn't really come to your defense. At least that's not the way it seemed like in the book.
Not at all. They were friendly. They had their own issues. I mean, I wasn't the only one getting picked on in the house, you know? It was wild. I mean, my father's idea of parenting was to make you feel really bad about yourself so that you would try harder. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, that was his philosophy. Well,
give me another example of that.
Well, he always pitted me against my older brother. My older brother had a much higher IQ than I did. And the minute the IQ, and this is in one of the stories, the minute the IQ test got taken, everybody started looking at me like I was dying. I mean, my parents were such intellectual snobs, they could not stand the idea of having a substandard intellectual person in the family. So every time so my father would always say to me, it's okay, Debbie, you're not that bright, but you're pretty. And of course, my mother was afraid that I was going to get vain about being pretty. So she would say, you're not that pretty. You better study, for Christ's sake. So I grew up thinking I wasn't smart and I wasn't pretty. And I was nowhere near as good as my brother, and I never was going to be. And then my father just pitted us against each other for our entire life. It's a miracle I don't hate my brother.
I mean, now, do they know about the book? Did they read the book, your brothers?
Well, the older one is not with us anymore, sadly. My younger brothers have read it. And yeah, I mean.
Are they laughing?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is truly hilarious. One of the things you talk about in the book, and this was big in my childhood as well, is that you had to memorize the state capitals in the states.
Absolutely. I can still rattle them off.
Well, wait a minute. Why? Well, okay, let me just throw out a few. Wyoming.
Cheyenne.
Montana.
Helena.
Florida.
Tallahassee.
Louisiana.
Baton Rouge.
Pennsylvania.
Harrisburg. You can't stop me, Missy.
So I have to tell you, just recently, my daughter is 13. And just about a month ago, her dad sent me an email. And he's like, did you know that Alabama does not know her state capitals? And I wrote back, I don't really think it's that important to you. And he wrote back, yes, it's that important. She needs to know the state capitals. And I'm still laughing about it. And then when I started reading your book, that was like your whole childhood.
Oh, my God.
What was it?
Well, we played the map. My father had this map puzzle I have in the family. It's a beautiful colored jigsaw puzzle from like the 40s. And it had all the names of the states and little pieces. It's a puzzle. And he would take the puzzle and he would put it upside down, and we would have to pick up the states from the back with no color, no name. We would have to place it back where it goes in the spot in the puzzle frame. We would have to name, I would have to say from the back, Vermont, Montpelier.
Okay, wait a second, Debbie, you're saying that you were essentially blindfolded, like you just had to do it from feel. You had to feel the states.
Yes, yes. And well, no, we weren't allowed to look at it though. And then we had to name the export, the major export. Maple syrup is the major export. And then we would have to put it back in the puzzle. And you kept going until you got one wrong, and then it was someone else's turn. And I could do that by age 4.
But
we have no friends, but I knew all the stage.
But Debbie, did you ever talk about that with your dad as an adult? Like, what was that? Did you want me to be a map maker or geographer? What did he want?
It was so accepted in my family that this was important that by the time I was an adult, I don't have kids that I know of, but by the time I was an adult, I was making my niece and nephews do the same things. We accepted the rite of passage to being a Casper.
That is just one of the funniest stories I've heard. And I've been doing this a long time. That just cracks me up. All right. So anyway, I'm good. I'm getting through your book. I love it to death. You guys have got to go find Debbie's book. And I know you will. It just came out in July of 2020. Now, of course, that was not expected, was it, Debbie? I mean, or was it in terms of by the time the pandemic happened, I guess your book was already in the works?
Well, yes, it was. It was already, this book was actually basically designed to be a companion piece to my one woman show, which I had just opened and it was about to open up again in LA.
Has anybody seen Debbie?
Yes, very good. I took it to the New York Festival and won the contest. And then,
yeah, you won the award at the United Solo Fest for Best Comedian. Yes, that's what happened.
Yes, I did.
And that's in New York. It's off Broadway. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So then I brought it back here and I was about to put it was getting produced here for the purpose of going back to off Broadway, because that's always been my goals, to have a one woman show off Broadway. And this book was going to be something I was going to sell out. It was a market. You know, you don't make any money in theater. You make money in the merchandise.
In the merch. Yeah.
It was the merch afterwards. And then we know what happened then.
But your book is still selling well. I know that for sure, because I was playing tennis with my friend Cynthia Levin the other day, and she said, oh, I'm in the middle of Debbie's book right now. I mean, people are reading it. Yes.
Cool. Yeah. 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 I'm kind of blown away. I'm surprised because it's not easy to sell a book on Amazon. There's like a million books on Amazon.
I know, it's true. And I work at Skylight Books here in Los Feliz, and I have been hosting the virtual events. And well, actually, we're getting a lot of people in the events. In the store, we could only ever fit 65. And now we're getting a lot more than that in the room. And so, yeah, people from all over the world. So, but I know that even to sell one book is a hurdle. But once you get your people, and I think you have them, then they're going to sell. Well, especially, like you said, they're your fans anyway. Of course they are.
Yeah, I think my people are women between the age of like 45 and 1,000. You know,
yeah.
I know that women respond to it more than men do because, you know, it's so much about your self-esteem. You know, yeah, funny stories. But at the end of the day, it's about how you overcome, you know, all the criticism, which just gets into our soul.
I'm telling you, Debbie, I want to read a couple of the reviews that you got. How about this review? Casper's writing sets standards. Her humor is blistering. From Dramalogue magazine. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really good. Your humor is blistering. It really is. Here's one from the LA Weekly. Sassy, funny. Casper flawlessly delivers.
Cool. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then one from Annabelle Gerwitz. She says, hilariously funny and heartbreakingly relatable. It really is. It's so relatable and it's just hilarious. So congratulations on writing the book. And now today you bring forth the topic, The Night I Was Billy Joel's Uptown Girl.
Yeah.
And you know, boom, right off the bat, I'm in because when I was in college, I mean, well, actually it goes back for me, seventh grade, when he put out The Stranger, or what was the album that had that song, Honesty? I hated that song.
I don't know. I don't like Billy Joel.
Oh my gosh. Well, I did.
What a story, darling.
And it was like, well, the first album is still probably my favorite, which I can't even remember the name of.
Was the first one?
No, that was like the second or third. And then it got into like Glass Houses. And then, you know, it just took off. But like The Stranger was, and it still is, like a flawless album. I mean, it's just so good.
Yeah.
And then he got a little more poppy and, you know, Christy Brinkley and the Uptown Girl.
Yeah.
So, but my God, I used to, Christy Brinkley, of course, at the time was so hot anyway. Her posters were everywhere. And, you know, she was up there with Cheryl Teagues and remember, don't you think so?
Yeah. Yeah. That was the day of the supermodel when there was only a couple. Now there's a million. I don't know who they are, but in those days
there were like six women and that was about it.
And we knew who they were and we revered them and we did what they did. We used the creams they used and we still didn't look like them.
Well, how can you when their legs alone are 5 foot tall? You know what I mean? It's just an impossibility. They're like freaks.
Christy Brinkley is like just legs and teeth.
Yeah, it's like they're 6 foot tall and there's only four of them in the world. It's
right. Right.
Anyway, Uptown Girl, I'm in to hear about this. I really can't wait. But before we get to Debbie's story, you guys, I wanted to remind you that the Storyworthy Hour of Power has been going so well. Every Sunday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time, it's five storytellers in 1 hour. Then we play Story Smash, the storytelling game show, and that is hilarious. So, Debbie, I have to have you on both.
Yeah.
I'm going to have you on both. Tell a 10-minute story, true 10-minute story. And then we played this ridiculous game show that is just the funniest thing. And we've had more and more people every week. We have more people. We're having so many people in the room. I'm going to have to up my Zoom membership. You know what I mean?
Well, you're doing great. You've got like an empire going, girl.
Well, once that show sells to somebody, then I will be really happy. And I think it will. At some point, it's going to sell because Story Smash is just too funny it's too funny to fail. It's going to happen. You'll see. But anyway, you guys, that's right. Head over to storyworthypodcast.com to get more information. And don't forget to check out my social medias. Yes, of course, at Storyworthy. I'm sorry you have to do that. But in fact, you do have to. It is apparently the rule. Okay, moving on. You guys, she's here right now, Debbie Casper. You heard her. She is one of the most versatile forces in the entertainment industry. I'm not kidding you. She's received so many accolades, and she was a two-time Emmy-nominated writer for The Rosie O'Donnell Show, and she also wrote on the sitcom Roseanne. Boy, I have heard horror stories about people working on Roseanne.
Well, gee, what do you think?
I think it's all probably quite accurate because it's not just one or two bad apples.
No,
I've heard it across the board.
Well, I have a friend named Bobby Nickman. I'm going to credit him to this line. When I see him, we worked on Roseanne together. And whenever I see him, he looks away and he said, "It's still too early." You know, he said, "It's like Vietnam. I'm not ready to talk about it."
That is unbelievable. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of something you witnessed?
My favorite Roseanne story is we would work 80-hour weeks, 90-hour weeks. You know, we would get to like Friday evening and we'd be thinking we were going home. And she would call up and say, "I hate everything. Start over." I know it's not a very good Roseanne impression. But at Christmas time, we were working on the lot with Seinfeld, Grace Under Fire, Sybil. We were all in the same lot.
Amazing, which is the CBS Radford.
Yeah. Very good. And it was all, they were all Carsey Warner shows except Seinfeld. But anyway, when Christmas came about, there was like these, you know, thousands of dollars worth of presents getting flown around to everybody, you know? So, I mean, I got a TV from Carsey Warner. I got this beautiful whatever. So I turned to somebody and said, "What do you think Roseanne's going to give us?" Jerry Seinfeld gave his writers dirt bikes.
Cool.
Dirt bikes. "What do you think Roseanne's going to give us?" And everybody goes, "Nothing. Don't count on it." So one day, right before Christmas, her assistant comes walking into the office and she's got a big bag of See's candy. And she says, "I got See's candy for the writers." Turns out that this assistant went to Roseanne and said, "It's time to get your writers a present. What do you want to get them?" So it came time to put her name on the candy boxes. The assistant says, "Okay, let's sign these boxes of See's candy, $15 each for your writers. She goes, "Who are they for again?" She goes, "They're for your writers." And she says, "Well, fuck them. I'm not giving them nothing. Give me the candy. Ben and I'll eat it." And she kept the candy and we got nothing. True story.
Yeah, that's really unbelievable. That's really crazy. I mean, for anybody out there that doesn't know, like at Christmas time or during holidays, you know, that's the whole thing. I think on Friends, they gave them all cars.
Yeah.
And my friend Maggie Roswell works on The Simpsons, and she's gotten amazing gifts like mountain bikes and luggage and trips.
Yeah.
You know, because it's their one time they can do something personal for their people.
Right.
That's really
very
sad.
Very, 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 very rich. So it's a write-off. Give me something nice, you know?
Yeah. And now poor Roseanne, I mean, she's like, she's so canceled. I think that's the new term.
So canceled.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, hey, did you know Mike Gandolfi?
I know the name. I don't know him.
I used to date him. He was on Roseanne, and he's the one who told me so many stories. I mean, I couldn't believe the stories. I really couldn't. I mean, and I don't like the gossip, but it's like that story keeps coming in. It's not, you know, it's not just one or two people. You know, on the other side, and I'm sure you have names to share, you'll hear only a good word about Henry Winkler, only a good word about George Takei, only a good word about Larry King, and a lot of other incredible people. So there are good people.
Oh, absolutely.
But when you hear a bad word and it's repeated, that's pretty true.
Something happens to women when they get their own sitcom, because all of them on the Carsey Warner lot at that time, I mean, this was 20 years ago. There was one night we were everybody tapes on Friday nights, and tapings are like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of people waiting to tape. You tape no matter what. One night, there was a full moon. Roseanne locked herself in her dressing room, refused to come out. Sybil Shepherd got in her car and drove off the lot. And Brett Butler stole her limo and drove to a bar. I mean, and the guy that runs Carsey Warner, it's like 6 o'clock Friday. He's got three tapings. He's looking at millions of dollars falling through his fingers. And he had to troubleshoot all three of them.
And there's 200 audience members ready to laugh, ready for the taping, right?
At each one. Yeah.
That is so crazy. I think about if and when I have my show, like I so want to let the people do what they do best. You know, like I'll try so hard to be hands off. I probably won't be able to, but I'm also, mm-hmm. I have a lot of gratitude. So I hope I would never be something like she became.
I can already tell you couldn't possibly be. You're nice. You know, some people are nice to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. And now she's just full on nuts. All right, let's move on. You have also, like I said earlier, you've had so many fantastic one-person shows, and you've gotten rave reviews from Dramalog again. And so let me think. Some of your shows were called, okay, Zelda Bing. That's like an alter ego for you, right?
Yes. She's a crazy, kooky doctor of manology who swears she can fix everybody's love life, and she doesn't know anything about it, you know?
And she's on the front of your website, right?
Not my website. She's on the front of the book that she wrote a book called There's Men Everywhere If You Lower Your
Standards. That's so funny. That's a great idea. And then like you were just talking about your other show that was off Broadway. Has anybody seen Debbie has now been cut off. I hope you can do it, you know, via Zoom or can you, what have you done? What's the plan?
I'm just going to wait for people to be able to sit in the room again. I'm a live theater freak. You know, the whole Zoom thing, it's just, to me, that just robs you of the energy of the moment of a one-person show. You know?
I know, but if I may share, This might be the situation for another year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying is there's a lot of solo shows out there that are not good.
Yeah.
And yours will be fabulous. So whether it's on Zoom or it's in a live audience, like I can come to your place and like cheer out the window or something, you know, if you need noise.
we'll see what happens. We'll see.
Yeah. Because I think that everybody, I think you'd have a lot of support and I'll bet it would be a huge hit. Plus you could always retape if you had to. You can find more about Debbie at DebbieCasper.com. And of course, buy her book over there. The name of the book again is You're Not That Pretty and Other Things My Parents Said to Me. Oh my gosh. It's just the craziest damn thing. You guys can find all that over on Debbie's website. And also you can follow her on Twitter at Debbie Casper. That's with a K, Debbie Casper 2. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Debbie Casper.
Okay. So we're talking about the night that I was almost Billy Joel's Uptown Girl. First of all, as I've already told you, I'm not a Billy Joel fan. I mean, yes, he's brilliant. But this story takes place in the early 80s. And at that time, I barely knew who he was. And he was a huge rock star, particularly in New York. Duh. So I'm in New York City, and I'm a waitress at this very hot, nouveau, she place to be seen restaurant on the upper side of west side of Manhattan. It was just continually packed. I waited on so many celebrities that I wanted to throw up. I didn't care anymore. For me, the summer was about money. I was saving up for a car. I was pretty young. I wasn't impressed. But all I looked at these people as were dollar signs in my eyes, what their tip would be. The Rolling Stones, I waited on them. They left me $2 on a $200 drinking tab. I waited on Robert De Niro, $50. Dustin Hoffman, 40% tip. Peter Max came in, doodles all over his placemat. And as I'm about to grab it, my Costa Rican busboy goes... And he scrunches it all up and throws it in the bus pan and throws coffee on top of it. Anyway, the point I'm making is that I just looked at everybody as what my tip was going to be. That's all that mattered. Early one Saturday night, I'm in the balcony. There's two floors to this restaurant. I'm standing in the balcony and it's completely empty. I have no clients yet. And the balcony was like the most prestigious place to sit. That's where they put a lot of the celebrities because everybody could see them and they could see you. If the queen came, they would have put her in the balcony. And there was this one table in the balcony, which was called the Eagle's Nest. And everybody wanted to sit there because everybody could see you from there. So I'm looking over the balcony. I look at the whole front of the restaurant is glass. I look out onto the front, into the street on Columbus Avenue, and I see this huge limo pull up, this big black limo. And I see two guys stumble out of it. And they look like a lot of trouble, which, of course, attracted me because I like a little trouble. So one was very short, one was very tall, and I watched them come into the restaurant. And while they're coming into the restaurant, there's a Billy Joel song playing on the quadraphonic speakers. I don't know which one it was, but he was always all over the restaurant. So the hostess starts walking them up the steps. She's bringing them up to my station. And as she's bringing them up, the shorter one starts waving to people on the steps like he's an emperor, saying, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Billy Joel, and that's my song. Hey, how you doing? I'm Billy Joel. I'm Billy Joel." And he's walking up the steps, and I'm looking at him thinking, well, now, if you were Billy Joel, why do you feel the need to say that you're Billy Joel? I mean, so I'm thinking he's just some idiot. Now, the guy's obviously very high. So he gets seated in that very prestigious table where everybody can see you. And he sits down and immediately starts tapping with his fingers, drumming on the table, singing to his own song. "You may be right. Da, 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 da. I may be crazy. Da, 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 da." And he's saying to everybody, "It's my song because I'm Billy Joel. I'm Billy Joel. How you doing? I'm Billy Joel." So I don't really know what Billy Joel looks like, which everybody finds shocking. But before the internet, you know, it's not like there was big talk shows they were on in those days. If you didn't get their albums and if you didn't follow them, you didn't. I mean, I had an idea what he looked like. And yeah, this guy looked a little bit like him, but I didn't know. So I go up to the bartender and I said, "Do me a favor. Look at that table and tell me, is that Billy Joel?" And the bartender's mixing drinks. He goes, I don't know, maybe. So I'm not sure whether it's Billy Joel or not, because he keeps saying it's Billy Joel. So I go up to the table to take his order, and he lets on this full-on total cocaine rant, no periods, no commas. "Oh, hi, how you doing? I'm Billy Joel. You're my waitress. Great. I'm Billy Joel. What's your name? Great. I love you. I love blondes. You're gorgeous. I'm Billy Joel. This is my lawyer. It's my birthday. I got to have a hamburger. He's going to have the duck. You want rice with the duck? Yeah, he's going to have rice with the duck. Make my burger medium with cheese. You know who I am, right? We want two double white Russians." And my head's about to explode. And I say, "Upper on the rocks." So I go over to the bartender with his drink order. And I say, "The guy says he's Billy Joel. Can you please look again and tell me if it's Billy Joel?" The bartender says, "I think maybe it is. I don't know." I'm running around the restaurant asking all the waitresses, "Is that Billy Joel? Is that Billy Joel?" He's like, "I don't know. I don't care. Everybody's busy. Nobody cares. It's Debbie's problem alone." So then somebody sits down next to the table next to Billy Joel. My section starts filling up. And Billy Joel goes, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Billy Joel." And he stands up and he introduces himself to the guy. And at this point, there's another song on the loop. It's not him. And he's singing anyway, he's singing his own songs to someone else's music, banging on the table. So somewhere around this time, the owner of the restaurant walks up to me. He's 6'5". His name's Marvin. And he calls me over. And I go over to talk to him, and he's pointing his finger at me in that "you're in trouble" kind of way because I'd been late or something. Well, Billy Joel jumped, well, the man who calls himself Billy Joel jumps up from his seat, runs over in between me and Marvin like he's going to defend me. His head literally comes to Marvin's belt buckle. He's so short and Marvin's so tall. And he says to Marvin, "You can't talk to Debbie that way. She's my waitress." And Marvin says, "Yeah? Well, I'm her boss and I can talk to her any way I want." So I take Billy Joel's body and I turn him around and I say, "Billy, go sit down. I got this. And he goes away, and I turn to Marvin. I go, he's not my boyfriend or anything. He goes, yeah, I know who he is. He's a pain in the ass. I know who he is. So the next time I go over to Billy Joel's table, he says to me, what are you doing later on? Tonight's my birthday. They're having a big surprise party for me at Majid. Shh, I'm not supposed to know. But I'd really like you to come. Do you want to come and be my date? You're gorgeous. I love you. I love blondes. Do you want to be my date for the party? And I said, tonight? Now? And he says, yeah. And I go, Billy, I'm working. And I kind of motion around the restaurant in case he didn't understand that I had a job there. And he looks around and he goes, working here? You don't have to work. I'm Billy Joel. And I said, well, I'm not Billy Joel. I'm Debbie Casper. And Debbie Casper has to work. So it comes time for him to give him his check. And all I can think about is this better be a big tip, buddy, because you are a pain in my butt, which is just annoying calling me over. Hey, Debbie, all night long. So he goes to leave. I give him the check. He gives me a $50 tip on a $50 tab, which is basically 100% tip. And as I mentioned, that's all I cared about. And he slips me a piece of paper and he goes, come to Majik when you're done. And you look this person up. And he hands me a piece of paper and I look on it and it says, Billy Joel. So I said, okay, Billy, see you later. And he leaves. He goes down the steps, waving to anybody that is looking at him still and telling everybody who cared that he was, well, you know who he was. So after my shift is over, oh, and then he tells me to bring a hot chick for his lawyer. So I grab one of my waitress girlfriends. I said, I don't know if it's really Billy Joel. This is so surreal, but let's go to Majik and find out. So she and I go to my house. We get dolled up. And then I say to her, it's midnight at this point. I say, you know what? I said, I want to call over there before I spend the $4 to take the cab across town. So we call Majik and I get a woman, hello. And I said, hi, I'm just calling to make sure Billy Joel's birthday party is there tonight. She goes, there's no Billy Joel birthday party here tonight. And she hangs up. So I turned to my friend and I went, see, I told you all, it is not Billy Joel. So she says, well, maybe the woman just can't say that over the phone. I said, all right, I will call back. So I call back and I say, and I change my voice and I go, hello, I am supposed to be on Billy Joel's personal guest list tonight. And I just want to make sure that he remembered to put me on it. She goes, I just told you there's no Billy Joel party here. So she hangs up the phone. So I turned to my girlfriend. I said, well, he's not there. He wasn't Billy Joel. There's no party. Go home. I'm going to bed. So I went to bed, but not before recounting all my tips again, which was really all I cared about in those days. So the next morning I go back to work. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. I walk in and the bartender, as I walk in, I mean, everybody knew I was going out. I was going to go out with Billy Joel. It was the talk of the restaurant. Everybody also knew that I didn't think it was really him. So I walk into the restaurant and the bartender says, hey, how was the birthday bash at Majik? And I said, there was no birthday bash. It wasn't Billy Joel. I told you all, it wasn't Billy Joel. And he says, oh, really? And he opens up the newspaper and the whole middle section of the newspaper is Billy Joel's birthday bash. And there's every rock star in the world dancing. And there's my Billy Joel dancing like a drunk scarecrow. And he's dancing and I can only see from behind with a tall, skinny, blonde chick. So the moral of the story, not the moral of the story, but the kicker of the story is he then began dating Christie Brinkley. So that, I believe, was the night he met Christie Brinkley.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. This is such a well-told story, Debbie. This is so funny. Where was the party? Was it at Majik?
It was at Majik. It was exactly where he said it was. The woman just lied to me over the phone.
What? That's terrible.
I know.
Oh, no, your friend was right. Then what did she say?
We were all like, oh, man, bummer. None of us were too interested in Billy Joel because, honestly, he was such an idiot that night. But Roger Daltrey was there. Are you kidding? Still my
Wow. Yeah, no kidding.
He was standing there dancing with no one.
Oh, God, boy. Debbie, you blew it. You blew it. Oh.
Barely the first time or the last.
Yeah, that is so gross. He was drinking White Russians. That's disgusting.
Because, hey, that was my drink. Watch it, Mickey.
Yeah, I know, but wait a minute. I'm just saying, like, if you have one or two or something, I don't know. It just seems to me like to drink that before your birthday party, before, I mean, I know he was an alcoholic, but I'm just saying, like, it's such a sweet, syrupy drink. Is it not? Isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. He was going to go have champagne. That's what they were, he was talking about, all the champagne and cocaine that I would be able to have once I got to the party. He goes, you've never seen so much Dom Perignon. And I'm like, all right, whatever.
Wow, that's a hell of a story, Debbie. I'm telling you. What kind of restaurant was it, by the way?
It was called Ruel's.
Okay.
It opened up as a really big restaurant with gorgeous chandeliers. It was very decorated, very kind of Rococo, although I don't know what that is, so I don't know why I said that.
Was it French? Is that like French, Ruel?
No. It was an American restaurant, really good food, really good chefs, but it was really a big hangout. I mean, people just showed up because they had these huge glass doors that opened up out onto the sidewalks. And this was the era of, you know, the brunches all over the sidewalks in Manhattan and the cafes all over the sidewalks. And it was just a beautiful place with great drinks. They poured a good drink. They let you snort cocaine off the tables. You can cut that if you have to. But that
that's hilarious. I believe you.
I would go over and wait on some celebrity, and he'd be doing lines on the glass table. And I'd lean down, and I'd do a line, and I'd go to the next table. It was crazy.
Wow, man. That is intense. Debbie, you must miss it. Am I right?
No, not real. No, because I overdid it. I got crazy. But, you know, the 80s, everybody talks about the 60s, but the 80s, man, you were decadent. They made the 60s look like the 50s. They were just wild.
Yeah, the cocaine was specifically so crazy and so accepted. It was no big deal.
Right. And before AIDS came in, everybody was, you could sleep with somebody by accident, you know? I mean, you just could. Oh, I'm sorry. What's with you?
You're so funny.
It was pretty wild time.
And so how long did you live in New York?
15 years. And then I moved here.
Well, I'm telling you, that's a wonderful memory. Great experience to live there. And then also to get to live here in LA where it's, you know, you can breathe easier, right? Well, not now, not during the fires, but. Yeah, I know what you mean. There's an energy about New York, though, that is just so much fun.
Did you ever live there?
No, I never have. I've only been there on vacations, and I used to be a flight attendant, so I stayed there a lot on my trips. But I was there this past December, and it was as I remembered. I mean, even this past December, it was just so great. And we went and saw a Broadway show and, you know, went to the restaurants and stuff. It was just great. And now it's quite depressing, really, isn't it?
I think so. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. No, I know. Hey, listen, at Ruel's, that seating area called the Eagle's Nest, that must have been like, you must have had the most seniority at the restaurant to get that.
You know, I actually had no seniority at the restaurant. I was very low on the totem pole because I was always late. I don't know why I got it that night. They just rotated. I just got it that night.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's...
It was a hard section to work because you had to go up two flights of stairs.
Yeah. And also it's hit or miss if they don't tip.
Oh yeah. Well, Rockstar did not tip.
Yeah. And you could spend 2 or 3 hours on a table. And then if you're not tipped, you are just completely screwed.
Right. Were you ever a waitress?
Oh my God, dude, I was a waitress in 18 restaurants. And when you were talking about the bill, you know, the bill coming and the tip, I mean, that's the whole game of restaurant working that's the whole game of waitressing is when they put the card on the tip tray and you take it back and you see the amount that they tipped. I mean, it just means everything and it can make or break your whole night.
Right.
Right? I always tell my boyfriend, and I do it as well, I always tip at least a couple dollars over what I should tip, because I think to myself, this $2 will make their, you know, will make them happy just for a minute. And to me, it's nothing, you know? So yeah. why yeah. not give them just a couple extra bucks to get a spring in their step? Because it's really hard work waitressing.
It is. It is hard work. I always over tip too.
Yeah, I do too.
Unless they have a bad attitude and they're rude to me, yeah. then they only get 15%.
Yeah, then fuck him. Fuck them. Listen, Debbie, it's just a thrill to talk with you. And your book, again, is just so funny. And I'm, like I said, I only have about 100 pages to read yet, you know, left. And I'm going to miss it when it's over. I don't want this book to end. I think it's just so incredibly funny. And you guys, again, go back. Or go over to Debbie's website and you can get it again at DebbieCasper.com. And again, the name of the book is You're Not That Pretty and Other Things My Parents Told Me.
They can also get it on Amazon.
Yeah, on Amazon, of course. But isn't it better to get it off your website? Because they could probably get it signed and stuff, right?
Not really, but I should.
That's all right, Debbie. You're so funny.
I didn't even think of that.
Oh my gosh, Debbie, didn't people ever get you to sign like their librettos and stuff, the theater program?
I don't have the internet figured out the way you do.
Well, listen, there's a lot to learn and it's an ongoing process. So you're not behind. You're just, you know, not caught up today. In other words, it's just it's a whole new world, as you know. So happy to have met you, and I definitely want you to do my other show if you will. I'd love that.
I will. I'd love to.
All right, you guys. One more time on behalf of Debbie Casper. This has been so much fun. You really cracked me up. And you guys, don't forget to check out Ebby Underwear. I've got to tell you, these underwear are fantastic. I got 3 pairs and I got a bra. I've been wearing the bra every single day. Super comfortable. You're going to love them, you guys. So don't forget to head over to Ebby to get 20% off your first order. Just head over to shop.join-ebby.com. That's shop.join-ebby.com. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Debbie Casper. Thank you again, Debbie.
Thank you. You're great. You're
great. Thanks. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy of you.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.